Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. This week on the podcast, we have Rebecca Hartrick. She works at Catholic Charities downtown Denver and works with refugees and people seeking asylum. She herself also came to the United States as a refugee from Argentina in the early 80s. And so she's going to tell us her story and a little bit about the refugee crisis and how we can help and in what ways you could get involved. So enjoy the conversation. Rebecca, thanks for joining us. I think a funny story, I think people won't know the difference, but we had already recorded a podcast and I accidentally deleted the file to it. And so we're re-recording. But I wanted you to come on because you have a interesting story of how you came to the U.S. and also how you currently help refugees and immigrants here to the United States, and I just want to hear a little bit about that. So welcome.
Thank you for having me, and I consider this take two.
Yeah. So first off, Rebecca, just tell us a little bit about your story. Where were you born? How did you arrive to the United States? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, thank you for asking. So I was born in Central America in a country called El Salvador, and I came to the United States when I was 3 years old. The reason my parents decided to come was because there was a civil war that had started in the late 70s, and they determined that it was not safe for us, especially for my father. So we decided to leave the country, and we arrived in the United States in 1980.
And you showed me a little bit ago some of those. You still have some of your refugee document and your card. What was remembering when you were a child? Do you remember much about that process and what it was like?
I don't remember anything because I was 3 years old. My memories start when I was four, once I was in the United States. But when I was a child, I would ask my parents and they would give me some information. They didn't want to scare me. But what I learned is that my father made the decision to leave because of the violence that was going on, and he felt that we were all at risk. And being that he had previously studied in the United States, it was easier to move to this country, and we came here seeking asylum, and eventually we were given refugee status.
So tell us a little bit from your own experience. I know you don't remember much, but your experience, but also your experience now as an adult of helping people who are refugees or immigrants, what are some of the things that refugees go through?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So even though I don't have memories of that trip, and all I can remember is being in the United States, it still is such a big part of my identity, and I identify very much with immigrants, especially people who come here when it's not their first choice, when they come as asylees and as refugees. And as a result, I've always been very interested in supporting this kind of population. So currently I work with Catholic Charities in Denver, and I've been there 18 months. And I would say about three or four of my clients are in the same state that my parents were when they came to the United States, where they are seeking asylum. They don't speak the language. They don't have work. Many times they're also homeless because they don't have a place to stay, or they jump from shelter to shelter. So they go through lots of hardship being able to settle in this country. And even like that is still better than staying in the countries that they came from. So what I do is I usually try to connect them with resources. I make referrals for them. And the good news is that three of these four are progressing very well, where they have lawyers who are working their case. They have a place to stay. They're working on learning English. They're fighters. They're really, really moving forward. But the thing is that the process is very slow. On average, it will take you 18 months and a lot of money and a lot of lawyer fees to gain asylee refugee status.
Is that kind of the biggest headache that you run into, is the slow process, or is there other things that hurdles you have to jump over that are common?
Yes. I think it's it's a legal process, and anything that's legal takes very long. And at the same time, there's high demand for the same thing. So you have lots of people requesting asylum, and yet there's limited resources. And then these people come with little to no money, and they have to figure out how they're going to pay the lawyer. Sometimes they have to ask family members to send money. And they're completely dependent on charity because they don't have any government benefits. So all of their support has to come from benevolent individuals, churches, charities that are willing to support people going through this process. And the other big barrier is language, you know, not speaking English and not being able to do things for themselves and having to depend on other people to do basic things for them. That's a really big hurdle.
Where are most, I guess on an average, where are the most refugees, where are they coming from? What are some of the places that people are seeking asylum here in the United States?
So here in the U.S., most asylees come from Central America. They come from El Salvador, where I'm from Guatemala, Honduras, and some from Mexico. I would even say most come from those countries in Mexico itself. And they come because of gang violence, because at least where I come from, where it breaks my heart to know that there's so much violence, they come because they have death threats. People approach adults and threaten to kill their children. They extort them for money. They can't keep their business because they have to pay extortion to gang members. And they can't stay in the place where they've lived all their lives. And so they have to leave for that reason. Other reasons people come are for natural disaster. If there's earthquakes, hurricanes, they need to leave. One of my clients is from Haiti, so I know there's issues there as well.
And do they come from those because in that natural disaster they've lost everything?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, natural disaster, war, poverty, localized violence, persecution, civil war, these are all reasons why people become refugees. It's not their first choice. It's not what they would have chosen. It's what life delivered them. And then there's some people from South America as well, from Venezuela, the countries that are usually have dictators. They leave from those countries. And then I was reading yesterday the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees. They were saying the world's majority refugees come from Syria, Afghanistan, South Sudan, and parts of North Africa. And Syria's gone through a really big civil war for the last 6 years or so. They spill over. Some of the countries that take them are Turkey, some countries in Europe. Many of these refugees risk their lives and lose them crossing the Mediterranean Ocean just to hopefully make it to Europe. And at the moment, 1% of the world's population are displaced, which is more than what was displaced at the end of World War II, which was the most recent, biggest war that we had.
Yeah, so. And I saw that you had sent me the article.
Yes.
And actually on my Apple News app, it popped up a couple articles about how right now, like what you said, there more percentage of the world population that's displaced is larger than it was after World War II.
Yes.
And so this really is a crisis.
It is. And I think what makes it a difficult crisis to manage is that it really doesn't, there's no obligation for a country to take in refugees. Mm-hmm. It really is a matter of desire. And so refugees are often unwanted, they're often mistreated, they're exploited, when they're already there at a disadvantage for surviving and thriving to begin with. It's just typically not an ideal situation for refugees.
I remember this summer, our youth mission trip, we went to Costa Rica, and one of the things that struck me there was they were talking about, we're working in the slums there, and they said they are having a bunch of people from those places you talked about seeking refuge there too.
Correct.
And they started, you know, saying that we in America were so focused on our border in a way of like having people from Mexico coming over, but what's happening is actually people fleeing from those places you talked about that are trying to make their way to the United States because they're fleeing war, they're fleeing gang violence, they're fleeing natural disasters. And so I think that's a fascinating statistic we don't put out there enough to people, that it's not just Mexico, but we have people from all over the world trying to come here for refugee status.
Yes, and I also want to point out that Mexico offers refuge for many of those people from Central America. So I think Mexico gets a bad rap when in fact they are trying to be part of the solution as well. And one of my clients from Central America actually spent 6 months in Mexico on her way to the U.S. Yeah, she had to. I don't remember exactly why, but she had to. I would like to provide a few definitions. So I learned the difference between an asylee and a refugee. An asylee is a person that shows up at a border and requests asylum. And by international law, that person needs to be heard and admitted into the country. Now, it could be a detention center, and I've heard detention centers are very not ideal. They don't have windows, there's not proper care, sometimes children are separated from parents, and so it's not necessarily ideal. And then an asylee has to endure months and months of hardship. They're homeless, they don't have a job, they only have whatever they carried with them, and they may not speak the language. So it's a really strong battle. One of my clients spent at least a year homeless as a result of that. A refugee is a person who requests refugee status before they leave their country. But that usually takes 18 months and a lot of paperwork, and you may not be offered it. So it's kind of like a high-stakes gamble and a lower-stakes gamble.
Yeah.
Some people don't have the luxury of 18 months.
Right.
They don't even plan to leave, so much less take 18 months to plan to leave as a refugee. And so refugees usually have it a little easier, but many people don't have the resources or the time to come in that way. I also want to point out that asylees, usually they come in undocumented, and the reason is because they don't have the money, they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the understanding of what it takes to immigrate legally. And a lot of that is a result of just poverty. You know, many of my clients just, they can't even afford simple things like paying for a wedding or paying for an education, you know, so paying for a passport and paying for a lawyer and paying for all of what they need to do just is not as easy as it sounds, is what I want to say. And on top of that, they're competing with so many other people. So they take the gamble and they come in as asylees. So I just wanted to make sure that I pointed that out. Something else too, and this is from what I've experienced with many of my clients, is to just take a moment and imagine your home, your job, your livelihood, your family, your friends, everything you've ever built, everything you've ever done, everything you've ever established. And from one day to the next, you leave it all. It's gone, disappeared. And you leave your mom and your dad, and you wonder if you'll ever see them again. Most likely you never will. Because once you leave, you can't go back. That's the reality of a refugee, is that they absolutely lose everything. And they have to start all over again. People middle-aged, having to start to learn a language, having to study, having to learn a new job, having to learn to live in a new place. It's very stressful. And on top of that, they face discrimination, exploitation. So I just want to point that out. I know Pastor Russ talked once about just lamenting, just taking a moment to acknowledge and not trying to solve a problem or trying to judge, but just acknowledging and lamenting that extreme loss.
Yeah, because that, you know, basically you're saying they're not just saying, oh, I would like to go to America. You know, but this is a heavy decision that needs to be made, and it's not made lightly. It's made because it's needed.
Yes.
Yeah, because nobody in a good situation would decide to leave everything they've built their life to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that started to kind of shape my mind differently on this topic was once in seminary, one of my professors heard us talking about illegal aliens, and he told us they're undocumented citizens,
undocumented immigrants.
Undocumented immigrants. Because no person is illegal. And him doing that was a way to try and give some dignity back to those people. And I think what you said, when the odds are kind of stacked against them, that sometimes they get taken advantage of, they get exploited. Is that, in your experience, is that one of the hardest things to see, is that people who have left everything to try and get a better life, to see people treat them less than human and exploit them in those ways?
I would say yes. From my experience working with my clients who are seeking asylum, I would say, thankfully, I've seen lots of charity towards them. Mm-hmm. From the schools where their children go to, from the churches they attend, from their neighbors. I have actually been pleasantly surprised to see how much support they've gotten. But at the same time, I've noticed that they've all struggled tremendously with just the living arrangement, mm-hmm. because they don't qualify for any subsidized housing, any kind of support from the government, then they're entirely at the mercy of other people. And that is very humbling, especially when you, in your country, you were probably boss at your work, or, mm-hmm. you know, you're the head of your household, and to have to depend on the kindness of other people, and sometimes they're not, is very humbling. I had a client who didn't speak any English, and she said to me, if I spoke English, I would not be homeless anymore. I would be able to solve my problems on my own. I wouldn't have to depend on other people. Hmm. And some of these people I'm talking about are professionals, you know, they're doctors and engineers. They're people who have the smarts and the intelligence, but they don't have the language skills or the knowledge, or they're not treated the way that they should be.
So what can, like you said, Russ said at one point, not trying to fix it, not trying to judge, but just being aware of it. But how can people help? Is awareness that first step into being able to help?
Yes, and I'm glad that you brought that up. Since we're in the context of our faith and our Christian beliefs, mm-hmm. I would like to draw our attention to a scripture. And this scripture comes from Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 18 to 19. It says, "He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow, and loves the sojourner, or alien, giving him food and clothing. Love the alien, therefore, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt." I think that, first of all, look at scripture. There's multiple places in the Bible where it talks about the importance of taking care of the alien. And I find it interesting that they're all part of the same group of a widow and an orphan. What is a widow and orphan? Someone who has lost something completely dear that cannot be replaced ever. And so being mindful of the fact of that extreme loss, and mourning it, and at the same time helping them overcome that vulnerability. All these people want to become tax-paying citizens who contribute to their society. They do what they do because they want it the best for their children. And so just being aware of that and not looking at them as criminals, or taking away what we pay for with tax money, but looking at somebody who is striving to just survive and contribute even more than what you give. My clients who are seeking asylum, they're very grateful and they want to give back and they want to be the best. They have such a strong work ethic. And to be willing to see that and to support it. Then beyond awareness, other things to do that I would suggest is supporting organizations that support refugees. And some of my favorite are Doctors Without Borders. They actually got the Nobel Peace Prize for the work they do. They support refugees where it's unsafe. They risk their lives to deal with medical issues regarding refugees. There's the International Rescue Committee, and they actually have a chapter in Denver. And if you're interested, you can volunteer. You can volunteer to teach English. You can volunteer to teach basic American knowledge and skills. Refugees even need to know how to grocery shop and how to apply for certain things, and you can help them. Or you can give monetary value money. And then I also recently learned of Catholic Relief Services, which deliberately supports refugees who have left their country, and they also provide services in the countries they come from to prevent them from leaving. One of the things that I also strongly believe in is microfinance and supporting institutions that provide small loans to people in developing countries. Sometimes all they need is like a $100 loan to start their business and make them be able to sustain their family and not feel the urgency to have to leave their country. Because some of the reasons people leave is because they just can't pay for, you know, simple things. So some organizations, for example, are Kiva, K-I-V-A. You can make a loan as little as $25. And it's not a donation, it's a loan. You get it paid back. There's like a 98% return on loans, and then you just give it back to somebody else. So those are all ways that I think are great to support refugees. And then another thing too is just to become aware of different cultures. For example, being able to welcome somebody of a different culture. Maybe it means, for example, hosting a foreign exchange student, or if you're a student in high school or college, consider studying abroad in another country, and just becoming aware of what it's like to live in another place. It gives you contrast, and you come to realize your wealth and your privilege. And just that awareness is priceless. And I do want to say, for myself, even though I came as an asylee and as a refugee, I come from a wealthy family. We had the means to do it the quote correct way. But if you support some of these other organizations, you can help people that don't have the resources or the means to do it the way that my family did.
And even with the means that your family had, it still took, 10 years before you became citizens? Or
thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, so we came to the United States in 1980, and then somewhere in the mid-80s, shortly after we were granted the refugee status, I'm going to say early to mid-80s, then we became resident aliens, and I loved my resident alien card because I felt like I was an extraterrestrial.
Like E.T.
Like I was E.T., and that was the decade that E.T. came out.
Yep, that was our time, yeah.
It was, I felt privileged to have a card like that. So that was all of the 80s. We were either a refugee or a resident alien. And when you're a resident alien, you can't travel out of the U.S. You have to stay. And then in the early 90s, in 1991, my parents were naturalized, and because I was still a minor, I was automatically naturalized with them. So I became an American citizen 11 years after I entered this country.
So even the right way, that's still a long time.
A very long time.
To wait. Yeah.
There is something called the green card, and there's also some kind of lottery I heard of where foreigners can come to the U.S. and immediately work. Because when you come as a refugee and or seeking asylum, you don't have a work permit, and it can take you a long time to get work. So there's ways that a foreigner can come and live and work in this country, but recently some of those ways have also been minimized.
Yeah. And I think in some ways for us here in Castle Rock, we're it's a kind of a bubble town where people are affluent and have their lives, and so they don't see this stuff happening near them, and so then it's just this thought of, well, it's not my problem then. But you don't have to go very far.
Yes.
Up north, and I would even say probably here in Castle Rock, we have people who have been refugees, and this is a, like the news has been saying today, it's a crisis right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to share is just Where I get a lot of satisfaction with my work is when I see my clients making baby steps, progress towards getting their status. It almost feels like they're searching for some hidden treasure. And that hidden treasure is the Social Security number Once you get that, then you count as a person in this country. And once you have a social security number, you can apply for work, you can apply for government benefits. So many more opportunities open up.
Credit.
Exactly. You can actually sign a lease, mm-hmm. and own your own place. You can take out loans, like Jordan was saying, and to get from being no one to being someone with a social security number is like reaching that jewel that you've been fighting for, like Indiana Jones looking to get that treasure. And it feels like it's such a huge struggle, but once you get to it, you're set. Mm-hmm. You're set. And then after you have that security number, then you work towards citizenship.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and if people want to get involved somehow, volunteer, or, you know, you mentioned Kiva, which is a wonderful site to give some small loans to people that you'll get paid back. Rebecca's given you all the different ways that you can get involved and do something and make a difference. And I think step one is just becoming aware of this. And I think we're trying to do that little by little here at New Hope with our series on who's our neighbor, won't you be my neighbor. And then we had Dr. Shala and Dr. Stone come this past Sunday, and I think that's a good step to hear somebody from a different cultural vantage point, and also somebody who came here from Syria, fleeing to be in medicine and stuff. And so I think little by little, the more we talk about it, the easier it is for people to try and make a difference in that area.
I completely agree, yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For the second time.
It was my pleasure, and I want to thank Pastor Jordan and Pastor Ross and the church for allowing me to do this and just building awareness.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.